أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Going over what we spoke about last night very quickly, a recap for those who might have not been here. We spoke about how there's different incidents, different events in the history of Islam that the Shia stresses on, of course, following the Ahlul Bayt's orders to do so, stresses on, keeps alive, speaks about. These majalis that we have are a blessing, an opportunity so that we learn about what has happened, analyzing history, analyzing what has been said, what has been done in the past, and so on. One of those was Ashura we spoke about last night. Ashura is something that is stressed on by the Shia school because it's very important, because many things come out of Ashura, one of them being that some people, when they hear about this, they say, wait a minute, what went wrong? Something must have gone wrong in the past that Ashura takes place. Something. Now, as was explained last night, for some, they will stop at Yazid. Others, they'll stop at Muawiyah. Others will go back more. Some will go all the way back to after the Prophet's death. But the results at the end of the day are that one can draw, conclusions that are drawn from Ashura are different. They vary from person to person. They vary. Ashura is an incident that everyone knows happened, but the results and conclusions that are drawn from this incident, they vary from person to person. On the flip side, though, we have a Fatimiyya, and I explain what I mean by Fatimiyya. Not just the Shahada of Fatimah al-Zahra, although that is the climax of the history of Fatimiyya, but not just Fatimiyya, meaning the Shahada, but those incidents that took place a little bit after, a little bit before the Prophet's demise. Fatimiyya is the flip side of Ashura in a sense, of course. What do I mean? That if the incidents did take place the way the Shia believes, the conclusions that are drawn won't vary that much from person to person. It'll be very obvious. Everyone will be, in a sense, on the same page when it comes to the conclusions that are drawn. The problem, though, is that when it comes to Fatimiyya, there's a lot of questions. It is challenged. Did it happen? Did it not happen? Did this incident happen? Did that incident happen? And so on and so forth. Here, you see how in history, things have been covered up. Things have been changed. Sometimes things have been fabricated. And this causes an issue. It blurs this whole concept of Fatimiyya so that the desired results don't come out of it. What are we going to be doing these nights? We said we're going to be addressing these issues, these incidents that took place a little bit before, a little bit after the Prophet, that if are resolved and solved, good conclusions can be drawn from them. Although I said this too, that we can't expect ever, and I'm upset to say this, but we cannot expect Fatimiyya to be explained in a way that everyone will be convinced. Why? Because that is where lots of tadlis has taken place. Lots of mixing up and blurring has taken place. That's why I said our goal, what we're shooting for these nights, is not to prove how the Shia faith is the right faith. Although that's something that's very valuable, if someone can do such a thing. And others have tried, ulama have tried, and much effort has been made in this direction, in this regard. Nonetheless, what we're after is to show another thing. What is our goal? We said our goal these nights is to just show that it's not true and it's not accurate to say that when it comes to the history of the demise of the Prophet and after the Prophet passed away, it's not true to say everything went smoothly all the way till at least the fourth Khalifa or the third Khalifa when he was assassinated. Everything went smooth. After that, things changed. After that, a group comes and calls themselves the Shia, because of someone by the name of Abdullah bin Sabah, or whatever the reason is. We said, we want to show that no. If others are going to say that the Shia faith is based on shaky foundations, then what we're going to try to do these nights is show that no, it was shaky from the start. Don't make it look like we have a solid foundation and then some decided to break off. They're the heretics. They are that sect that broke off from the mainstream, smooth, flowing, and fluent school of Islam. That's not the case. This is what our goal is. Are we going to make people Shia on the way? No, we're not after that right now. If someone decides to do so, fine, alhamdulillah. But right now, that's not what we're after. And our approach is going to be that we're going to go straight to only, usually, from what I remember, only the first two first-hand books of the Sahihain. Because when it comes to the audience that you're speaking to, I said this last night, you're either speaking to a proper, pure Shia, alright, I don't have to cite those two books. I can cite, there's so much more to cite. We don't have to worry about the Shia school of thought when it comes to sources. Our literature has enough about Fatimiyya. What we're trying to do is trying to at least explain things in a way that if someone is impartial, whether that person is a person who wants to embrace Islam for the first time, or is one of the brothers of Ahlul Sunnah, but you know, he's open a little bit. He is not under the heavy influence of their sheikhs. If this person wants to decide, at least we show him that, look, we have something to say. Don't think that it was perfectly smooth and then some people broke off for some reason, whatever. As we shall see tonight, what they say about us, people like Ibn Taymiyyah. It wasn't like that. So that this person, when he goes to that sheikh and asks him questions, he knows that there's other sheikhs that also have answers, have their stuff going back and forth. This is what we're after, inshallah, these nights. That's our target audience. We want to show that the only advantage the mainstream school of thought, let's call it, the majority, the only advantage they have over us is that the power was in their hands. They were the majority. That's what we want to show. Or else when it comes to reasoning and understanding, we have more than enough to say, just like others might have to say. Inshallah. Recite Salawat. Okay, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We're going to start Fatimiyya, we're speaking, right? Incidents that took place. One of the first ones that we're going to talk about, inshallah, is the one by the name of Raziyat al-Khamis, or Raziyat Yawm al-Khamis. I've noticed that this has not been broken down too much, especially in the English language. So I thought it would be good to start off with this. Maybe you could say that this is the last time that the Sahaba, the great Sahaba, those top companions of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, they are getting together and they are with the Prophet in his final days. Everyone knows that the Prophet is probably going to pass away. Very ill, the Prophet, not feeling well at all, and they're all gathered now around the Prophet, not all of them, but some of the elites. Do you have a hadith for this? No, we don't have a hadith. That in this occasion, the Sahaba were around the Prophet. Maybe it was normal people. We will tell you that, listen, when it's the final days of a revolutionary like the Prophet, who has spent half of his life or a third of his life for a cause, and he has had close companions on those final days when he's passing away, are they going to let anybody who wants to come and see him, especially when he's ill on his deathbed? No, there are people around him. But what you can be sure about is at least half, if not all, of the ones that are around him, maybe 10, maybe 15, maybe 20, I don't know. We don't know. They were of the elite companions. So we can say, in a sense, that this was the last gathering of the companions around the Prophet. Because after this, we don't have a report that the Sahaba gathered around with the Prophet. What happens here? I'm going to read about 5 hadiths, and I want you to bear with me. There's a reason why I'm reading them. So we can understand the literature that we have in this regard from the two Sahihain, Bukhari and Muslim. Two or three from Bukhari, two or three from Muslim. There's a reason why I'm doing this. The first and foremost being to show that this is one of those incidents that no one, alhamdulillah, has doubted. I don't think we can find incidents around Fatimiyyah before the Prophet's demise, after the Prophet's demise. I don't know if we can find something that everyone unanimously agrees on that actually took place. The other ones, as you shall see in future nights, you'll find somebody who's doubted about it. Somebody. Even some of the things that us as Shia, we are 100% sure it happened. And then you find in many Sunni sources also it has happened. You will find some people say, no, there's something here that you missed. And it shows that what you're claiming might not have happened. But here, alhamdulillah. So this is something to work on. Let's read some hadith. In Al-Bukhari, he says that Ibn Abbas, and let me tell you about Ibn Abbas a little bit. Ibn Abbas was in his teens, apparently, when the Prophet passed away. Ibn Abbas is a close companion of Imam Ali alayhi salam. You can say Imam Ali, he's a student of Imam Ali alayhi salam, more than he was a companion of the Prophet. He didn't see the Prophet that much, but he is seen as a great companion of the Prophet, a faqih, a muhaddith, a mufassir. They say when he was born, the Prophet took him, and he prays to Allah, Allahumma faqihhu fid deen, make him a faqih in the deen. So he's not a normal, average companion here. He's saying this. What's he saying? He says, Ibn Abbas, يَقُلْ يَوْمُ الْخَمِيسِ وَمَا يَوْمُ الْخَمِيسِ. Thursday. And man, what a Thursday. What Thursday are you talking about? The Prophet passed away, يَوْمُ الْإِثْنَيْنِ, on a Monday. Let's go back 4 or 5 days, it'll be Thursday. So 4 or 5 days before the Prophet passes away, Ibn Abbas is talking about that Thursday. ثُمَّ بَكَى حَتَّى بَلَّ دَمْعُهُ الْحَصَى. He cries until the pebbles under him are wet, become wet. I'm reading this because I want us to imagine. Let's see the scene. We might even have to close our eyes for this. قُلْتُ يَبْنَ عَبَّاسِ مَا يَوْمُ الْخَمِيسِ. What is this Thursday you're talking about? This is in Bukhari. قَالْ اشْتَدَّ بِرَسُولِ اللَّهِ وَجَعَهُ فَقَالْ. The Prophet was in pain. It was very severe, his pain and illness. So he said, اِتُونِ بِكَتِفٍ أَكْتُبْ لَكُمْ كِتَابًا لَا تَدِلُّ بَعْدَهُ أَبَدًا. Bring me pen and paper, in today's terminology, pen and paper. Back then it might have been deer skin, it might have been bone, whatever it was. Bring, I want to write something so that you will never be misguided after it. فَتَنَازَعُوا. So they began to fight. They began to argue. The Prophet said one thing, bring. What reason is there to argue? And I'll tell you the story I had with this Wahhabi Sheikh in Mecca. I asked him about this. It's interesting. فَتَنَازَعُوا وَلَا يَنْبَغِي عِنْدَ النَّبِيٍ تَنَازُعُ. Ibn Abbas says, and you're not supposed to argue in the presence of the Prophets. فَقَالُوا مَا لَهُ أَهَجَرْ. What's wrong with him? Is he, question, is he speaking nonsense? Like, is he being delirious? Like, he doesn't know what he's saying? إِسْتَفْهَمُوا. They went and asked the Prophet, are you sure? Like, what are you talking about? Let me just tell you the story right now. I told the Wahhabi Sheikh that I was talking about last night. For those of you who were here last night. The Wahhabi Sheikh I met in Medina this year, guarding the Baqi so we don't commit shirk, he said to me, I asked him, I said, look, if the Prophet had said such a thing, would we even, for a split second, even tell ourselves that, you know, or ask ourselves, or second guess the Prophet and not do what he's asking? What his answer was, we'll get to, inshallah. فَقَالَ ذَرُونِي فَالَّذِي أَنَا فِيهِ خَيْرٌ. So the Prophet says, leave me, go. Just leave me, what I have is better than what you are in, or you are asking me of. So this is one hadith. Next hadith. I'll just take the part that I need. فَقَالُوا مَا شَأْنُهُ أَهَجَرٌ. This is another hadith in Bukhari again. Same thing. Is he talking nonsense? Does he know what he's saying? Is he being delirious? So far, do we have any names in these hadiths of who said this? We don't have any names. Okay, I want you to keep this in mind. We're going to take a lesson from this. So that's the second hadith from Al-Bukhari. Number three, فَقَالَ بَعْضُهُمْ. Some of them there said, إِنَّ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ قَدْ غَلَبَهُ الْوَجَعُ. The Prophet is overwhelmed with pain. The pain is overtaking him. In other words, he's saying things that he's not supposed to say. That's what the Shia understands from this. But the Sunni school does not understand it from what I just said. Does not understand this from this line. Anyway, inshallah we'll talk about all of these. It says, فَقَالَ بَعْضُهُمْ. Some of the companions there, they said, pain has overtaken the Prophet. He's in pain. So again, we don't know who it was, according to this version of the story. Okay. And then it goes on, it says, that this person who said he has in pain, حَسْبُنَا كِتَابُ اللَّهِ. The book of Allah is enough. I mean, the book of Allah says, I have everything in me. تِبْيَانْ لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ. It is an explanation of all things. Whatever you need is in the Qur'an, right? So what, we don't have a problem. The Prophet is in pain. And then tanazu' happens, and then ikhtilaf happens. They argue again, same part. So three reports, and maybe even more, in Al-Bukhari, but we don't have any names here. We don't have any names. I want you to see why this book has made it to the top of the list, of course in our eyes, of the sources for hadith and history, this Sahih al-Bukhari, because very strict, very selective and picky when it comes to a hadith. Now his student, Sahih al-Muslim, that comes next on the list, discloses a little bit more. I want us to pay attention to this. So in those three, we see there is no names mentioned. But now let's go to Muslim. In Muslim it says, فَقَالَ عُمَرْ إِنَّ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ قَدْ غَلَبَ عَلَيْهِ الْوَجَعْ. He's in pain. The Prophet's in pain. Who said this? The second Khalifa said this. قَدْ غَلَبَ عَلَيْهِ الْوَجَعْ وَعِنْدَكُمُ الْقُرْآنَ حَسْبُنَا كِتَابُ اللَّهِ. The Qur'an is with us, that's enough. What do we need? So wait, the question that should come to mind right away here, aside from the talk that we're having right now, what we're discussing, is why is it that Bukhari says, قَالَ بَعْضُهُمْ. Some of them said. Someone said. Well, just please name it. If Muslim is naming it and all the other books after are naming it, why aren't you naming? That's why you made it to the top of the list. That's why I'm always saying this. It is super hard to sometimes prove things through the books. If you're going to use these two books, there's a reason why they're at the top of the list. And then in the Sahih Muslim version, towards the end, he adds something else. He says, فَكَانَ ابْنُ عَبَّاسِ يَقُولُ. Ibn Abbas used to say, after the story is mentioned, it says this. It says, Ibn Abbas used to say. What does that mean, used to say? Does that mean that he said it once and it was over? Or again and again? Used to say means at least twice, three times, four times, right? What did he used to say? أَنَّ الرَّزِيَّ كُلَّ الرَّزِيَّ مَا حَالَ بَيْنَ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ وَبَيْنَ أَن يَكْتُبَ لَهُمْ ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابِ. The Ibn Abbas used to say that the tragedy, the whole tragedy, all of the tragedy, was what got in between the Prophet and him writing what he was going to write that day. Yes. And we have other hadith from Muslim and so on, and it's not just them. Ahmad bin Hanbal adds more. But I said, we're not going to go to those books. Mustadrak of Nisaburi also we have. And so on and so forth. It goes on and on. We don't care about those. We care about these two only. Why? Because in the story of Ghadir, when they want to refute Ghadir, although it's in Ibn Hanbal, although it is in Al-Mustadrak and all these other books, but since it's not in Bukhari at all, and in Muslim, it just says the Prophet said some good stuff and then spoke about the Ahlul Bayt a little bit and said a couple lines and that's it. Since in these two books Ghadir is not mentioned, we will still put a big question mark on this incident. That's why we're going to these two books when it comes to Raziyat Yawm al-Khamis. So that they can't use this excuse. In these two books, we see, wow, look at that, some good stuff to work with. Alright, let's move on now into what we're going to use when it comes to this, what we're going to draw from this hadith. Recite salawat, please. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. first, let's say what we're not after. What are we not after proving here? We're not after proving, one, that the imamate of Imam Ali comes out of this story. Am I saying that this is not enough? No. Our ulama have proven that this story can be used to show the imamah of Imam Ali and prove the imamah of Imam Ali. What their reasons are, we're not going to get into. What was our goal? Our goal was to just show that please don't say that everything is perfectly set, everything was smooth, everything is, you know, decisively appointed by the Prophet from the start and everyone knows what they're supposed to do and then the Shia broke off. No, things are shaky for both of us. If you're going to say we're shaky, you're shaky too, I'm sorry. That's all we're after right now. We're not after proving the Imam of Imam Ali here, but what we do want to prove is that, oh, so these greatest companions that were around the Prophet, they also sometimes will argue against the Prophet. So if we're going to believe in their super righteousness, this is the righteousness that we're talking about. That they can stand in the face of the Prophet. Of course, here they will have answers. Well, it's beautiful, their answers, the way, mashallah, I don't know how, I don't want to get into them. But there are answers even for this. How the second Khalifa did fiqh here, did ijtihad here, he was afqah, and more understanding of Ibn Abbas here, and so on and so forth. It's a long story. But anyway, we're not after proving all that. We want to see what some of the things they say are, and then show that no, those things don't stand. Those things don't hold. That's one. Number two, usually when we come to these hadiths, we see that they say that someone said he's speaking nonsense. Someone or some people. The Prophet is speaking nonsense. And then we have the name of the second Khalifa, but he doesn't say that. He says, the Prophet is in pain. So our ulama, once again, they have proven that no, the same person who said that this is that he's being delirious, the same person said that pain has taken over. But we're not even after proving that right now. We're not even after proving that. Because of course, if someone proves such a thing, then it'll be really bad for the second Khalifa. But we're not after that right now. We just want to show that this letter that was never written, what we can get out of it, that everyone has to believe in. We want to see what some of the answers are that are given. Alright, so now what is the context of this hadith? Let's close our eyes. Well, you don't have to close your eyes. I'm going to close my eyes. And let's say, alright, Ibn Abbas is sitting. And he's telling a story, and then he can't go on. Why? He's crying so hard that it's getting wet under him. That's a lot of crying. That is a lot of crying. And then he says, "Raziya kull raziya," the tragedy. What a tragedy! It's a great tragedy. That this is something as if he's lost a family member or a loved one or something. So that when later on when we're breaking down the hadith, no one says, oh, there was nothing going on, it's nothing big. No, something big has to be happening. That he is crying like this. This is one thing I want you to imagine and think about. And another, what's going through the heart of the Prophet? When he tells the people that bring something so that we write, and then after 23 years of spending everything for these people, sacrificing, there are some who still don't understand that when the Prophet speaks, you don't speak against his will. Why? Because وَمَا يَنْتِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَى. The Quran says he doesn't speak out of his own whim and desire. إِنْ هُوَ إِلَّا وَحْيٌ يُوحَى. When he speaks, this is wahi. This is wahi. Now, how does the Shia use this hadith? The Shia, very simple. He says, okay, the Prophet wanted to write something. They didn't let him. Why? Because they knew what was going to be written. They knew what was going to be written, and if they didn't get in the way of it, things wouldn't go the way they had planned. Their agenda that they had would be compromised. But now let's go to the answers that are given to us, and then see if we can have answers that refute those. Number one, when I was in, now was the time to tell the story actually. So I told the guy, I said to him, this the Wahhabi Sheikh, I told him, so the Prophet, he's saying, bring something to write it. That I wish, like if the Prophet ever tells me, I'll be like, wow, what does he want to write? let me bring a piece of paper so at least I know, I'm curious. Let me see what he wants to write. So what did the Shaykh tell me? I've said this somewhere else before too. It's funny or, you know, very upsetting. I don't know which one. Some people might start laughing, some people might start crying. I don't know. Get the tissues ready, brother. But before the story, let me get a salawat from you and move forward, inshallah, so we can have room. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So I'm like, yeah, I would have been so excited to see what the Prophet wants to write. And then he said, yeah, you're right. But they already knew what the Prophet wanted to write. I was like, whoa, cool. Tell me more. Maybe you're just a Shia in disguise. No, you're not Shia because you're not letting us say salam to the imams and faqih. He said, we already knew what he was going to write. What was he going to write? He was going to write, يَأْبَى اللَّهُ وَالْمُؤْمِنُونَ إِلَّا أَبَا بَكْرٍ. He was going to write that Allah and the mu'minun don't want anyone except the first Khalifa. So like I was like a balloon that was just being blown up more and more, and I was, and then you just pit the needle in the balloon and boom, like all, like, and everything I had, it was just over, everything went dark for a second. So what is that? Let's see where this comes from. When you go and you speak about Raziyat al-Khamis, Yawm al-Khamis, they will tell you it is very clear. It is very clear what the Prophet wanted to write. Why is it clear? Because we have other hadith in Bukhari. I want to show you guys how hard it is. How hard it is when it comes to using the books. And why lots of our Sunni brothers out there, it's not their fault. They've been raised like this. First hadith in Bukhari. عن أم المؤمنين عائشة, it says here. قالت قال لي رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم, it says, في مرضه أدعي لي أبا بكر وأخاك حتى أكتب كتابا فإني أخاف أن يتمنى متمن ويقول قائل أنا أولى ويأبى الله والمؤمنون إلا أبا بكر. Sorry, this is صحيح مسلم. The hadith goes like this, that Aisha says that the Prophet told me to call my brother and to call my father, and so that he can write something for them. Of course, this is not the same incident of Khamis, of course. It's another incident. So that I can write something. What do you want to write? Whatever it is. I'm afraid that someone who is wishing and wishful and wants something and is after something will get to work after I pass away. And some will believe, or someone will believe, that he has precedence when it comes to khilafah. Of course, the khilafah part is not in the hadith. And this is one of the criticisms that we're going to talk about regarding this hadith. I'm afraid, the Prophet says, that after I pass away, someone's going to be aiming for something that he doesn't belong to him, and will say, I have precedence over others. While Allah and the believers, they say, we do not want anyone except Abu Bakr. This is the first hadith. Another hadith. سُئِلَتْ عَائِشَ مَنْ كَانَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ مُسْتَخْلِفًا لَوْ اسْتَخْلَفَ. Aisha was asked, who would the Prophet have appointed if he had appointed someone? And she had said, of course, Abu Bakr was the first, would be the one that's appointed. Of course, the hadith goes on. We'll talk about that later. So these two hadith, the main one though is the first one that I said. There's other hadiths too, but let's see, do they really give that desired result or not? One thing though, brothers and sisters, and this is what I mean by analytical history. One thing that we can state right away is that, okay, so you do believe that in that Thursday, that black, dark Thursday, The Prophet wanted to write something. Yes, one. Two, you also agree that what he wanted to write about was regarding what issue? Imama and Khilafa. Yes? Yes. We have hadith who he wanted to say it about. They will tell you. The first Khalifa. Okay, good. Good. So he did want to write about Khilafa and Imama. So that means if we are able to shake a little bit the foundations of this notion that the first Khalifa was the one he wanted to write about. If we're able to kind of negate that, it shows that, okay, he wanted to write about Khilafa, but the Khilafa of someone else then. Who was it? I don't care. That wasn't our goal. Our goal was to do what? To just shake foundations a little bit. And so show that this one is shaking, just like the others that you say are shaking. Okay. First of all, these hadiths that say he's appointing someone, they contradict other hadiths that say he didn't appoint someone. I have two hadith here that Al-Alusi I saw, I just happened to come across in his tafsir of Ruh al-Ma'ani, he says there. Number one, قالوا, the people asked the Prophet, Ya Rasulullah, لو استخلفت, don't you want to appoint someone? Don't you want to appoint someone? In other words, the people understand that someone has to be appointed, but the Prophet doesn't understand. نعوذ بالله. قال لو استخلفت عليكم فعصيتموه عذبتم ولكن ما حدثكم حذيفة فصدقوه, and so on. He says, if I was to appoint someone for you and then you went against him, you will be punished. So I'm not going to appoint somebody. But rather do this and do that. Okay, so first of all, he didn't appoint someone. But you're saying that he wanted to write that he has appointed the first Khalifa. One. Number two. Ya Rasulullah, they asked, من نؤمر بعدك? Who do we make our Amir, our ruler after you? Once again, the people understand that there has to be a ruler appointed. The Prophet apparently, na'udhu billah, doesn't. قال إن تؤمروا أبا بكر تجدوه أميناً زاهداً في الدنيا والآخرة وراغباً في الآخرة. If you make Abu Bakr your Khalifa, you will find him ascetic. You know, doesn't care about the dunya, and all he cares about is the Akhirah. Okay, and he's an Amin, trustworthy. Okay. وَإِن تُؤَمِّرُوا عُمَرْ تَجِدُوهُ قَوِيًّا أَمِينًا. If you make him your Amir, the second Khalifa, Umar, your Khalifa, you will find him strong and trustworthy. And لا يخاف في الله لومة لائم. He does not fear anybody in the way of Allah. Okay. وإن تؤمروا عليا, the Prophet is saying, ولا أراكم فاعلين. This is an interesting hadith. He says, and if you make Ali your Khalifa, and I don't see you doing that, I don't think you'll do it. And this is not our books. تجدوه هاديا مهديا يأخذ بكم الصراط المستقيم. If you make Imam Ali your Khalifa, you will find him a hadi, a guider. Mahdi, guided. يَأْخُذُكُمْ إِلَى الصِّرَاطِ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ. He will take you to the Sirat al-Mustaqim. I will not comment on this hadith. You can just think about it yourselves. But the point being, so the Prophet is saying, I'm not going to appoint anyone. Let me just tell you, if you appoint this person, this person, this person, these are their characteristics. So the Prophet doesn't appoint. So first of all, right here we have a contradiction. Who says that the Prophet wanted to write somebody's name? Okay, let's move on though. Can we even rely on these hadiths? No, we cannot rely on these hadiths. Why? Now some people here, they will try to say we can't rely on these hadiths because, and then they want to prove that, for example, the one who is relating all these hadiths, which is one individual, Aisha, they want to prove that she's not reliable. Okay, that's one way of doing it. But we don't even want to talk about that. Because what did we say? What was our goal? Our goal is to, in our approach, is to go through there using their rules. When we use their rules and we want to play the game by their rules, you can't break the rules or else it won't be effective. So I'm not going to come out and say she's not reliable. No, she's very reliable in the Sunni school of thought. So what do I say? What are we supposed to say? We say, in the story of Fadik. Now here, you get happy, you know? Because you find that the same thing is used against us in Ghadir, and how Ghadir is refuted. How Fadak is refuted. All of a sudden you see that, oh cool, the same reasoning we can use when it comes to these issues. The same reasoning that they've used against us, we can use back. What do we say? We say, in the story of Fadak, when Fatima al-Zahra said, the Prophet gave me Fadak as a gift. He gave it to me. They said, where is your shuhud? Where are your witnesses for this? She had witnesses. One of them is Ali ibn Abi Talib. What did they say? They said, no, you can't use Ali ibn Abi Talib, because everyone knows when it comes to a qada, bab al-qada, when it comes to the judiciary branch of Islam and how judging and judgment takes place, they will tell you, a person who testifies in court, if he's testifying or she's testifying towards for something that is in their interest, a benefit in it for them, whether it's monetary or no, not even monetary, materialistic or immaterialistic, whatever it is, that testimony is not accepted. So Fatima al-Zahra, we're not going to accept your testimony, your Imam Ali's testimony for you, that the Prophet gave you Fadak. Why? Because if Fadak comes to you, Ali ibn Abi Talib will also benefit from this. And a person who benefits, and if something is in their interest, if they testify for it, it's not acceptable. Let's come to this hadith now. Let's say no, Aisha, let's say, is reliable. But she is testifying to something that has to do with her own family. So someone might say, but there's no money involved. First of all, who said there's no money involved? They were getting their shares. But even if we don't say that, just the fact that your father is becoming the first Khalifa, that's enough. That's something big, actually. To have your own family members make it to the top. You can get your money later. Whatever. Point being, there's an interest here. It's to your interest. So this hadith can't be relied on, that says that he was going to write, that the Prophet said, Ya Aballahu wal mu'minun illa Abu Bakr. That's one point. Point number two, regarding the second hadith. What was the second hadith? They asked her, who would the Prophet have appointed if he had appointed someone? She said, my father. Okay. In this hadith, is it really a hadith or no? Are we hearing something that is not a hadith, but it looks like a hadith? It's not a hadith. They are just telling us what Aisha said, not what Aisha said that the Prophet said. In other words, what is being related to us here, as if it is the ijtihad of Aisha. The understanding of Aisha. Let me give you an example. When we go down more, inshallah, we'll talk about this, that this raziyah, this tragedy of Thursday, who named it tragedy? Ibn Abbas, right? Ibn Abbas called it the tragedy. There are some of those Wahhabi sheikhs, they will say, Ibn Abbas said it was a tragedy, not the Prophet. So this is the understanding of who? Understanding of Ibn Abbas. It's his ijtihad. We don't have to accept it necessarily. Okay, fine. You don't want to accept it? Fine. But here also, this is the ijtihad of Aisha. لو استخلف, she said, it would have been my father. Are you relating a hadith to us? Or are you just giving your opinion when they ask you a question? All of this based on her being reliable. Of course, as I said, our ulama don't find her to be reliable in the hadith. But we're not going to use that when we're answering. So as I said last night too, sometimes we hurt ourselves. And then we'll come and say, she's not even reliable, and prove that she's not reliable. Brother and sister, please, they're not going to accept it from you. We have to be more analytical here. All right. But even if these problems that I said didn't exist, it's her ijtihad, I don't know, it's in her benefit and in her interest, So her testimony should not be accepted the same way Fadak and Ali ibn Abi Talib's testimony was not accepted. Even if we put all of that aside, what do we find? A very big problem. A very big problem. What is that problem? The problem is that if the Prophet said, come, I want to write a letter, where is that letter? Where is it? If there was such a letter, then why is it that in Saqifah, when they want to prove the Ansar wrong, the Muhajirin, of course, when I say Muhajirin, it means the first Khalifa, the second Khalifa, and Abu Ubaidah al-Jarrah. We'll talk about Saqifah later, future nights. Why is it that these three, when they're arguing against Ansar, no one pulls out the letter, man? Just pull out the letter. Show the letter that says Ya'ba Allah wal Mu'minun, or what the Prophet wrote when he said Ya'ba Allah wal Mu'minun. Show us the letter at least. How come no one uses this as an argument? This is very strong proof that there's something going on here. And then if someone says, well, no, the Prophet said do it, but in the end he changed his mind. Okay, then if he changed his mind and he didn't write the letter, then we can't use this incident anymore. Maybe the Prophet wanted to appoint the first Khalifa, but then he said, no, you know what, I changed my mind. It gets fun, kind of, you know? The same thing they do to us in Ghadir, we will do the same. Maybe this is what he meant. Maybe that's what he meant. 50 things will list possibilities that the Prophet meant when he said that. The same way, Man Kuntum Mawla has 50,000 meanings and can have 50,000 meanings. Although Allama Amini has proven all of them wrong except one, which means master and authority. But anyway, if there's 50 meanings there, there's 50 meanings here. Ya'ba Allah wal mu'minun illa. Allah does not want anyone except want anyone for what? Is it mentioned in the hadith? No, it's not mentioned. I'm sorry. I can't accept. If the Prophet had been more clearer, I would have accepted. But the Prophet wasn't clear here. The same way he wasn't clear in Man Kuntu Mawla, Fahada Aliyun Mawla. You see how it's getting better for us now? What's one point when we're getting analytical? Where is this letter? And it's not even clear. One, two. Why is it that if they know what the Prophet is going to write because he had another letter before, or he had said something before? This is very important, brothers. Let's just pay attention. Why is it that in the account of Sahih Muslim, where it says, فَقَالَ عُمَرْ غَلَبَهُ الْوَجَعْ حَسْبُنَا كِتَابُ اللَّهِ, when he brings a reason for why they don't need to write anything, what is his reason? His reason is that we have the Qur'an. If there was such a saying or such a letter, they should have just said, the Prophet, did you not listen, O Muslims? He said this before. Why are you bothering the Prophet? Because this is what they tell you. They say when he said the Prophet is in pain, what did he want to do? He wanted to lift the burden of the Prophet writing such a letter in such pain. If we already know what the Prophet wants to write, then why put him under that burden of writing it? This is what they say. We say, okay, if that's what it is, then what was it that he wanted to write? They say, well, he had said, Ya Aba Allah wal Mu'minun. We say, then why does he say, Hasbuna Kitabullah? We have the book of Allah. What was he supposed to say? He should have said, Aisha or Abu Bakr, bring that letter that the Prophet wrote. Or at least he should have said, there's hadith that the Prophet had said that he only wants Abu Bakr to be Khalifa, the first Khalifa. If he had said the hadith, people would have accepted, according to them. Why? Because in their version of Fadak also, when Fatimah al-Zahra is asking for her right, and the gift her father had left for her, what do they tell her? They tell her, and this is when you watch these, once again, these shuyukh, when they're explaining it, and you want to hurt yourself sometime. They tell you that they told, the first Khalifa told Fatimah al-Zahra alayhi salam, he told her, that there's a hadith that I've heard that you haven't heard. And I'm going to tell you that hadith and that will solve the problem. Oh, what was that hadith? إن نحن معاشر الأنبياء لا نورث ما تركناه صدقة. Us, the prophets, we don't leave anything to be inherited. And what we do leave behind us is a sadaqah. Use it as sadaqah. It's not something that is inherited by our offspring. And now, and then when they read this hadith, this Wahhabi sheikh will tell you, this is the way he explains the story. He says, and when Fatimah al-Zahra heard this hadith, she got happy and she thanked. And she said, I did not know that there's such a hadith. Thank you very much. And she went and she was happy. Okay. So this, apparently, if something is even against your interest, if you have a hadith for it, people will accept, right? Right? Then here also, you should have just said, brothers and sisters, oh ashab, there's a hadith you didn't hear, but we've heard. Ya abballah wal mu'minun. And then everyone would have said, oh, okay then, alhamdulillah, we know what's going to be written. He doesn't say that though. He says, the Qur'an, we have the Qur'an. لَن تَضِلُّوا بَعْدَهُ أَبَدًا. You will not be misguided afterwards. We have the Qur'an. The Qur'an says, everything, الْيَوْمْ أَكْمَلْتُ لَكُمْ دِينَكُمْ. I've mentioned everything. Everything is in the Qur'an. The deen is kamil and perfect and complete. There is no reason for anything else to be added. That's what was said. Why do we cut a part of it out? These are context clues within the hadith, within the account. Now let's move on to the word al-raziyya. The word al-raziyya itself does a lot here. It's very important. And that's why I said, let's put ourselves in that context of Ibn Abbas sitting and crying like that. Recite the salawat. When it comes to raziyya, the word raziyya itself is very vital here. Although we finished the job already. What did we prove right now so far? That look, please, it's shaky. It's something that happened for sure, but we don't know. At least, the least we say is we don't know what this is all about. The least. Because this is used for them. They say this is one of the reasons why he is Khalifa. We say it's shaky. But just to put the nail in the coffin, Ar-Raziyya. Ar-Raziyya, which means tragedy. Some say, no, it wasn't a tragedy. Who says it's a tragedy? Ibn Abbas, he did his own ijtihad, and I explained this. That's number one. First of all, Ibn Abbas did his own ijtihad, fine, but he's not a normal person. He's a faqih. I said this. The Prophet has prayed for him. Allahumma faqihhu fid din. You cannot open a hadith book. Each page you will see Ibn Abbas's name there. And if he says something, he knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's talking about. He's crying like this and saying. Some don't acknowledge that it was a raziyya, but usually they do. Okay, cool. They do. What do they say? Let's see what Ibn Taymiyyah says here. He says that it was a tragedy and he was crying because it was a tragedy. Oh, all right. What was the tragedy? He says the tragedy of the Khawarij that came later and the Rafida. That came later, the Rawafid, that came later. And it's interesting how in this book of his, Minhaj al-Sunnah, is very bad-mouthed. He bad-mouthed this a lot. That's not how an alim is. Anyway, is a tragedy because of the Shia that came later and because of the Khawarij that came later. Brothers and sisters, let's get a little analytical again. Right? I don't like going deep and stuff, but we have to do this. I want us to think about this, and you don't have to get it now. Think about it when you go back outside the majlis even. Think about it. If it's a tragedy, let's look at the story from the Sunni perspective. Everything was smooth, they will tell you. The Prophet passed away. We have 5 or 6 hadiths. If I get a chance these nights, I'll explain those one by one. That talk about the first Khalifa, Abu Bakr being the first Khalifa. Okay, the Prophet passed away. They will tell you that there was a consensus. Everyone gave bay'ah to Abu Bakr. There was a little bit of question and answer. They said, oh, why didn't you talk to us? They said, oh, because we have hadith, you know, don't worry about it. They said, oh, okay, thank you very much. And everyone got along. Umar's time comes along. After Umar's time, who killed Umar? Who killed Umar? Was it a Rafidi? No, it was a dispute over something. It was a dispute. The slave of, I think it was Mughira, The servant of his, he was giving him too much work. He comes to Umar ibn al-Khattab, he says, complains about Mughira. And Umar ibn al-Khattab doesn't address his issue. He gets angry. Nothing to do with Shia or Shiism. Alright. Then we move on to Uthman's time. All the good stuff they say about that time. So where's the tragedy here? Ali ibn Abi Talib comes to power. There are civil wars. Jamal, Nahrawan, Safin. But does that have anything to do with Shia? No. It doesn't have to do anything with Shia or Rawafid. Rawafid came, according to them, after Uthman. But even the Battle of Jamal, do we see any Shia there? No. Unless Aisha and Talha and Zubair are Shia. Do we see Shia in Safin? These are Ahl al-Sham. They're not Shia. What tragedy? Where? And Ibn Abbas passes away during Imam Hussein's time, or after Imam Hussein's time, he passes away. It's not like Ibn Abbas was alive till today and he sees all the bloodshed and sectarianism that's going on. Unnecessary sectarianism because of weird Shias and weird Sunnis just provoking each other. So Ibn Abbas, what has he seen in those years that he's calling a tragedy? And when he says tragedy, he means because of the Shia that came. Or those who doubted Imam Ali's imamah. But he also says Khawarij. The Khawarij, they were doubting whose imamah? Imam Ali's imamah, right? Please pay attention here. Pay attention. If they're doubting Imam Ali's imamah, the letter was, according to the Sunni school, the letter was supposed to be written about who? About the first Khalifa Abu Bakr, it was supposed to be written about. Did the Khawarij go against Abu Bakr or against Imam Ali? The tragedies that happened later have nothing to do with Abu Bakr's name being mentioned or not in those days. What tragedy? But the flip side now, when we look at the other side, what do we see? What we find is that we can understand at least the tragedy if we look at it from a Shia perspective. Yeah. None of Siffin would have happened. None of Nahrawan would have happened. None of Jamal would have happened. Ashura wouldn't have happened. Uthman's assassination wouldn't have happened, which led to all the tragedies after. In Nahjul Balagha, Imam Ali points on this. Points to this. None of this would have happened if that person's name who was supposed to be written was who? Was Ali ibn Abi Talib's. It makes a lot more sense. I'm not trying to prove the Imam of Ali here, alayhi salam. I'm just trying to show that when the word tragedy is used, the tragedies that did happen during Ibn Abbas's time had nothing to do with the first Khalifa's name being mentioned in that letter of the Prophet or that writing of the Prophet. These are issues, these are major problems and discrepancies in this literature. And there's lots more. They will bring answers, brothers and sisters. Let me tell you this. They will bring you answers again. But the least is that, as I said, our goal is accomplished. It is shaky. The foundations are weak. That's why. We have a lot more to cover. But inshallah, I'll leave it for tomorrow night. There's a lot more to say about this. And Raziyat al-Khamis, as I said, it's something to work on. Because everyone agrees that it has happened. Something we can work on. As you shall see, other incidents that we will cover in the future, none of them are like this, unanimously accepted. And when it's not unanimously accepted, it can be questioned, and all the results that you want to get out of it, haba'an manthura. Of course, according to Bukhari and Muslim. If you want to play by those rules. But this is something to put time on. Inshallah, we'll cover the rest of it tomorrow night, and then we'll move on to future incidents. Inshallah, recite 3 salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Allah.